Hello, everyone. This is Rosalind Sadek. I want to welcome you to the second in the National Child-Centered Divorce Month teleseminar series. We have a wonderful group of experts to join me this evening in talking about creating a win-win child-centered divorce. I'm Rosalind Sadaka, founder of the Child-Centered Divorce Network, and I want to introduce to you this today a former killer divorce attorney turned mediator, Cynthia Tiano, also a collaborative attorney, Michael Mistrassi. We have mediator and parenting coordinator, Cindy Harari, and I'm going to be joining the group and talking tonight as well as founder of the Child-Centered Divorce Network at Rosalind Sadaka. I'm going to let each of our experts give you a very brief background on themselves so that you can get an understanding of the scope of experience that they have and the books they've written so that you get a better understanding of who's on board, and then we'll start with some questions. So why don't we start with Cindy Harari and give us an introduction and tell us briefly about yourself, just a minute or so.
Sure. Thanks very much, Roz. I have been an attorney for over 20 years, and I have always focused my practice on maintaining a proactive approach to working with clients. And in the area of family law particularly, my interest is in creating projects that work together, and those are parenting projects, and settling conflicts. I've been trained as a mediator and an arbitrator, and here in Florida, I'm qualified as a parenting coordinator. And as a parenting coordinator, it's part of my job to educate the parents who are divorced or divorcing about the systems and issues involved with divorce and to help them to create communication systems so that they can more effectively work together as co-parents. And those parents work together either by cooperatively parenting their children or by doing something called parallel parenting. And the kinds of issues that parenting coordinators deal with typically are the things that are really the everyday nuts and bolts of parenting, whether it's time sharing, for example, or something like choosing what after-school sports activity a child's going to be involved in that impacts the parents' time with their children and the children's time with their parents. I find that it's best to work as part of a team, and so I'm delighted to have the other participants on this call, Cynthia Tiano, who's a mediator, and Michael Mistrassi, who's an attorney, because as a team, we can best work together to help move families through this very, very difficult and very transformative process.
Thank you, and you're so right on. Why don't we have Cynthia Tiano give us a brief introduction?
Hi, Roz. Hi, Cindy and Mike. It's great to be on the call with you. I'm a licensed attorney practicing primarily divorce law in Florida for 27 years. For the first 14 years of my practice, I was a litigator, a very aggressive litigator, was known as a shark, a barracuda, a killer, divorce attorney, some other names that we can't mention here on this call. And I saw the light, and maybe we'll get into that a little bit later, and closed my practice about 13 years ago and became a Supreme Court certified family mediator and have been practicing family mediation ever since. I have also written a book, and that book is called Happily Divorced: Secrets of the Win-Win Formula. We'll talk more about that, I know, a little bit later. I also founded the Peaceful Divorce Network that Cindy Harari is a partner of with me, I'm very honored to say. And that's at peacefuldivorce.org. And Roz and Mike are both members of the site, and we're very grateful for that as well. We have, of course, many, many members who are divorce professionals there. I'm also the founder of the annual Celebrity Co-Parent Awards, and that's something that Roz and I have worked on together. And So that's it. We'll get into the websites and so forth later on, but I am very honored and very pleased to be here tonight. Thank you so much, Roz, for having me on the call.
It's my pleasure, and let's introduce Michael Mastrassi.
Hello, everybody. Thank you, and I feel the same about being invited to the call, and hopefully we can reach out and help some people change their lives for their children's benefit. I've been a practicing attorney for about 20 years in Baltimore, Maryland. I'm also a mediator, and I'm a collaborative divorce attorney. Collaborative law in Maryland has only been around about 5 or 6 years, and I was kind of on the ground floor of that, and it's really starting to grow, and we'll probably talk a little bit about collaborative law in a minute. But the most important case, and the biggest custody case I ever had, unfortunately, was my own when my son was about 2 years old, and he's now 16. Went through years of tough litigation, and then after that, I really got into trying to help people to get out of those kinds of situations, and I was involved in a lot of ugly cases. And then when the collaborative movement came around, it was something that totally made sense because I saw what the system does to people and how it doesn't solve their problems. It just puts a Band-Aid on a lot of things. And the collaborative approach is a way to really get around that and to improve things and make it a lasting relationship for everybody. So it's kind of a change in philosophy, and it sounds like everybody on the line at some point in time has had this change in philosophy or seen the light, and there's a reason for that, and I guess you'll hear about it in a little while. But I'm glad to be here, and thank you.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And briefly, as Rosalind Sadaka, I'm the author of the book, How Do I Tell the Kids About the Divorce? A Create a Storybook Guide to Preparing Your Children with Love, which is based on my own experience when I told my son about divorce and created an innovative new approach to breaking the news for children. And I have founded the Child Centered Divorce Network and National Child Centered Divorce Month and work with teams of experts like our guest tonight to help spread the word so that we can make positive changes in the divorce legal system and in the way parents approach divorce so that they avoid all the ugly mistakes that we see parents making when we read the headlines. That does not have to happen, and we all know people who are involved in very ugly divorces, but the people who are part of the child-centered divorce movement feel that there are other alternatives, and that's what we're going to talk about today and take a serious look at. Can we really create win-win solutions and divorces? And we use the term, there's many terms that we use, peaceful divorce, a cooperative divorce, collaborative divorce. There's a lot of new terms that are being used that maybe 10 years ago people never even heard. And my question first for the three of you is, can you get divorced without making your spouse your enemy? Is it really possible? Let's keep this answer brief so we can get into the meat of it all. But I'd love you to share your focus on that. Why don't we start with Cynthia?
Absolutely. I have done it in over 1,000 mediations that I've done. I have seen it happen time and again. It absolutely can. I think that one of the most important things to do is to make sure that you control your emotions. That's, of course, the number one. And that is basically using common sense. Don't hire the most aggressive shark killer divorce lawyer. Don't fuel those fires. Take a step back. Take a time out. Get off judgment, be quick to forgive, all of the ingredients that one would use when they're in a tight spot and are choosing to take a peaceful route. You need to be proactive and in control of your emotions.
Thank you. What about you, Michael?
I think when it comes down to divorce when children are involved, that's kind of where I want to keep the focus. Probably everybody else here does too, but with respect to that, if you basically have a philosophy that, you know, I love my children more than I may dislike my ex, and, you know, it's basically the other side of all that anger and hatred, you got to overshadow that with the love that you have for your children, and in doing so, you want to give them the best possible life that you can with or without two parents being together. So sometimes you got to work extra hard, and if you focus on the love that you have and the time that you have with your children, sometimes that not only helps to get rid of the anger and the pain, but it allows you to be a better parent all the way around.
I love that phrase, loving your children more than you hate your ex. That's really a good one to keep in mind. And Cindy, what's your perspective on peaceful divorce? Is it possible?
Absolutely, it's possible. And just dovetailing what Cynthia and Mike said, Cynthia said it's important to stop, and stop is the first word in the title of Mike's book. I think it's really, really critical that when people are going through divorce, it's really, really the best thing that they can do is to just stop and start to think about what repercussions their actions are going to have. I know that at this point in time, there are a lot of resources available to folks who are thinking about divorcing or who are getting divorced or in the process of getting divorced. And I know that creating a peaceful divorce now is way easier than it was about 13 years ago when I was thinking about getting divorced. And I went through 3 attorneys, and my divorce took 6 years, not because it was very, very difficult, not because we battled, but because every time we got involved with the attorneys, they would fuel the fire so we would stop. So it's very, very important that people stay in control of their emotions and stay in control of their divorce process.
And I think you hit on a really key point there that we need to discuss further, because that is really what this is all about. Obviously, if you get divorced and there's no children involved, well, you could go and never speak to that person again the rest of your life, and life goes on. But as we all know, once you're a parent getting a divorce, if you don't focus on having a child-centered divorce and work to do the best job you can in co-parenting and creating peaceful resolution, then your children are going to pay the price. So let's discuss why hiring a shark divorce attorney is really a bad approach to go, and how mediation plays a totally different role in the process, an alternative that just opens up doors for people in so many different ways. Why don't we start with you, Mike, and get your perspective on that?
Well, one of the things is that I have a real dislike for, and unfortunately it concerns my brothers and sisters at the bar, are lawyers that basically thrive and make their whole existence on throwing fuel on the fire to churn out bills. And unfortunately, there are a lot of lawyers out there that do that. And some of them, that if you talk to them, their philosophy is, hey, you know, these people want to fight, and I'm here to help them fight, and if they want to waste their money, I'll take it. And it's very sad, quite frankly. But I think that they have to realize that a lot of lawyers really aren't as concerned about their children as they probably should be. And I think when you have lawyers that are more concerned about the children as opposed to just winning, it's a totally different kind of process and a totally different kind of outcome. But if you go to a lawyer who is known to just fight and file all kinds of motions and make everything harder than it needs to be, first of all, you're going to spend a ton of money. And usually what happens is somebody's got to respond to all that stuff. So you now have two sides that are basically adversarial on every single thing that happens. And it's impossible, quite frankly, not to spill out onto the children. And then what happens a lot of times is one parent, for example, just if you give an example, say one parent left the other one and didn't care about the money or the finances or the property and just said, you know, I want to have a 50-50 relationship with the child or whatever, and they split up, and then all of a sudden the child becomes the only thing they can get back at the other parent. And a lot of times that's what happens. And a lot of lawyers will help parents do that, and that's the real difference between the different kinds of processes, like collaborative law and the litigation process. But Cynthia, I guess, does that kind of resonate with you?
Yeah, Cynthia, I think you can speak to the killer attorney side of things, can't you?
Well, yes, absolutely. And in defense of my brethren attorneys, and I'm probably standing out on a plank here, when I was a practicing litigator, you have to remember that for some reason, divorces are filed in the adversarial system, and I believe that that's true throughout the entire country, which is really not the appropriate place for families to find themselves when they are in the process of dismantling their intact family. But nonetheless, that's where they are. And by definition, the adversarial system creates winners and losers. And we're trained as lawyers that we have an ethical obligation to zealously represent our clients, and we take that very, very seriously. So at least I did, and I know most of the divorce lawyers, at least in the county that I practice, and they take that obligation very seriously, and I do believe that that the litigation is driven by the clients and the relationship between them. So I think the biggest part of the problem is they come to the lawyers while they're still hot and the motions are running hot. And they come in and they tell this horrendous story to the lawyers, and the lawyer will rush to their defense, file what needs to be filed, and the litigation takes on a life of its own. So yes, there are some lawyers who churn the case for the fees, but I do find that it more is a situation where they feel this obligation to zealously represent their clients. So take heed, people who are listening, our listeners, take heed that the adversarial system in and of itself, once you get that ball rolling, you're no longer in control. Judges have their schedules and they have to move things along. But that being said, you can educate yourself. There are attorneys out there such as Mike and many, many attorneys who are on board with peaceful divorce. So be very careful when you're initially hiring your lawyer to make sure that that you set the stage, you let them know, I want to have a peaceful divorce. I don't want to damage my children. I don't want to damage my family. And they will pretty much follow your lead. So, no, do not hire the most killer divorce attorney unless you want to spend your children's education, your retirement fund, and any other money that you may have left on giving it to the lawyer so they can spend it on their children's educations and their retirement.
And one of the things I love about your book, Cynthia, is Happily Divorced, is that it really gives a very clear demonstration of the options when a couple takes one route or the other. So you really can see how the litigation system rolls right over people and takes on a life of its own. Cindy, why don't you share with us more about how mediation works in contrast to all of this?
Well, I think mediation is a very, very useful tool in the process of families who are divorcing. I think it's really important to understand, as Mike and Cynthia just talked about, that lawyers are trained in an adversarial system. Lawyers are trained to win, and lawyers should be an expert on the law. So lawyers are terrific advisors, but people are experts on their families. And lawyers are not trained to focus on the outcome of the family, traditionally in the family law system. However, when lawyers are trained as mediators, as we all are, and other lawyers out there are trained as mediators, and lawyers start looking at the bigger picture, and lawyers are trained in a collaborative process or a peaceful divorce process, then the lawyers understand that the best outcome for the family is for those folks, especially those folks with children, to be able to sit down and resolve whatever issues they can. And I think it's really critical to understand that while mediation in some circles has developed as a marathon session where people are sitting for hours and hours and hours and trying to figure out absolutely every last detail and then signing a document when they're totally exhausted and really don't know what the heck has been going on for the last 12 hours, that is changing. There are people like Cynthia out there who do multiple mediations. There are more lawyers who are turning to mediation early and often. They are taking their clients and they are advising their clients about the best possible outcomes, and having their clients receive that kind of guidance, assistance from other professionals such as parenting coordinators and coaches, then those parents can make really, really good decisions and not turn their lives over to a court, a third party who doesn't know anything at all about the family but does know the law and can only decide that one person will win, the other will lose. At mediation, the essence is coming up with a win-win solution for the family.
Absolutely. And I just want to mention that another part of the team that sometimes is included are therapists who come on board to speak on behalf of the children, and divorce financial analysts, who are another member of teams that sometimes are included. And the team approach just makes sure that every facet of what you're needing in your divorce is being taken care of, and everyone is working to resolve in that win-win fashion, which Cindy just mentioned. Before we move on and talk about kids, let's do one more clarification round about the differences between collaborative law and mediation and any other alternatives that you think should be brought up so people have a clear understanding of their options and the distinctions. Why don't we let Mike talk about them, collaborative law?
Collaborative law is kind of like the new kid on the block. Basically, the essence of collaborative law is let's say you have two attorneys and two respective spouses, and they sit down together and sign a contract, which is known as a participation agreement. And the cornerstone of that is that they pledge not to take the case to court. So from the very beginning, the focus is taken away from the winning and losing that we've just talked about, and it's one resolution. So what happens is you now have four people working together to try to come up with solutions. And from the attorney's perspective, it's a different kind of an outcome when you're not saying I'm in this to win or what can I get for my client and things like that. Basically what you're trying to do now is how can I help these people resolve this situation so it's as acceptable as possible to my client, and that also includes the other attorney looking out for his or her client the same way. So it's basically about finding an acceptable solution. Nobody's going to be happy. And what they also do in a collaborative setting is they have the ability to bring people in who are also trained, whether that would be a child specialist or a very new and emerging area of family law is divorce coaches, where each parent, they have one divorce coach model and a two divorce coach model. Sometimes a couple together will have one divorce coach, and sometimes they'll each have their own. And a lot of that deals with helping them with communication issues and keeping their emotions under control. And if it needs beyond that, then they can refer them to therapists and things like that. So basically, it's a team approach to finding a workable solution for the family. And the atmosphere is so much different than in a litigation setting or with litigation lawyers, because a lot of times, and Cynthia, as you know, even very adversarial litigation attorneys, there are times when they sit down and have what people refer to as a four-way, where we're all going to sit down and try to settle the case. But even when you're sitting down trying to do that in an adversarial system, it's still about winning and losing, you know, winning at the table as opposed to in the courtroom. And when you have a collaborative four-way, it's just an entirely different atmosphere. It's an entirely different process. And what happens is you get an entirely different result. Then you get a result that works and a result that the people choose themselves as opposed to a judge choosing it. And that's the most important thing, I think.
Yes, because the parents don't give up their power, which is so important, not only for yourself personally, but for the fact that you're giving up your power about your children, which is a huge area, and it creates so much grief for the family and the parents and for the children in the long term, as we'll be discussing as we move ahead. Cynthia, why don't you talk to us a little bit more about mediation in contrast to collaborative so people can get a little more understanding of the definitions and the distinctions?
Well, in our geographical area, collaborative has been around for a very long time, I think probably close to 20 years, but it has not been embraced in large part by the attorneys. And I think that a big part of the reason for that is because of the participation agreement that Mike mentioned. I'm not sure how it is in your state, Mike, but here, you have to have two collaborative lawyers who have to be trained as collaborative lawyers in order to embark on the process, and you have to sign that you will not go to court, and if anybody needs to go to court for any reason, that the lawyers who are on the case have to withdraw from the case. So one could see how that is not not something that might be acceptable to divorce lawyers in particular, and some clients who become emotionally attached or certainly financially invested in their lawyers and don't want to have to start from scratch if they need the court to help them out on any issues. We have, Cindy and I and another very fine family lawyer here in South Florida, John Mahal, are in the process right now of creating a new model called the Peaceful Divorce Model, which is also a team approach. I'm not going to spin off too much there, but it will be coming in. We will be training lawyers in this model, which has, of course, the same intention as collaborative, which has many, many good points. No question about it, but is a little bit more flexible in that it does not require the lawyers to get off the case, doesn't require that you have any particular certification in it in order to practice it, but it's very intention-oriented, intention-based, and so there are other models, and there are even other models out there. Mediation is utilized. I'm not sure, Mike, if in Baltimore mediation is utilized in the collaborative process, but mediation certainly is utilized very much here in the state of Florida. It's required in the state of Florida and has been since 1996. In every single divorce case, you have to go to at least one, if not two, mediations to try to resolve the issues between you before you can ever get before a judge. And mediation, as has been said here many times, keeps the power with the parents, keeps the power with the parties, with the divorcing couple. And that is the primary benefit and responsibility for those listeners who are embarking on the process. Mediation is your opportunity to create your life on a go-forward basis, to create your life for yourself and for your children. From a financial standpoint and from a parenting standpoint, and can be an extremely empowering process. But the only decision makers there are the parties, are the couple going through the divorce, not the judge, who's a complete stranger. And although very well-meaning, most of our judges are, they are severely overburdened, overworked, and simply do not have the time to put the same care into it as you and your counsel can do.
Yes, very, very well put, and an important point for everyone to understand. And Cindy, if you could just share a little bit about you, because you are standing with the hats of being a mediator and a parenting coordinator. So, how does the parenting coordination fit into the mediation model, so that people can see how valuable that can be for them?
Well, Roz, parenting coordination fits into both the collaborative model and mediation, as well as traditional litigation. I think it's really important just to make a note mentally for all folks that if they're going to hire a lawyer and the lawyer calls him or herself a collaborative lawyer, that's just a label. It's really important to understand the intention of that attorney. If the attorney has the intention to settle the case, to work with you, and to focus on your issues, then you are going to have a different kind of outcome than you will from somebody who calls themselves something. So I think it's really a question of let the buyer beware. But getting back to parenting coordination, that is a relatively new process that is available for separated or divorced parents so that they can work with a specially trained, specifically trained individual whose job it is to help the parents to make decisions that are strictly child-focused, only child-focused. And this model developed in response to the overburdened court system that had to deal in California, first of all, with high-conflict parents who were going back to court again and again and again. They were given that name, high-conflict parents. And so parenting coordinators have in the past been a response to, available as a response to those families where there is so much damage being inflicted on the children because of the parents' inability to communicate and make decisions, that the courts needed some third-party professional to get in there and help. So parenting coordinators are typically lawyers
or mediators or mental health professionals in our jurisdiction in Florida, they must be trained, all parenting coordinators must be trained as family law mediators. And parenting coordinators have a limited scope of responsibility. Parenting coordinators focus the parents only on their child-related issues. And I think that it's really important because sometimes parents get everything all mixed up in the whole divorce and forget that what they need to do while they are disassembling their marital relationship financially and philosophically and psychologically, that they need to create a new set of rules, so to speak, to communicate with each other, to deal with each other, because they will always be parents to their children. So it's a very conflicting time, and a parenting coordinator is now available to every divorcing couple that files for divorce within the state of Florida, but parenting coordinators are not all created equal. So again, it's a question of let the buyer beware. Just because someone calls themselves a parenting coordinator, please make sure that that person has had the appropriate training, has the appropriate licensing, and is really qualified to do the job. And really, their job is to work themselves out of a job.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, parents are the best people to parent their own children, and all parenting coordinators understand that, except in egregious situations. The goal is for the parents to be able to develop a new communication skill set so that they can be the best parents for their own children.
Well, that was very well put, and it leads us to my next question, which is really the crux of what we're all here to talk about. And that has to do with how we can minimize the impact of divorce on our children, whether we have infants, in middle school children, teenagers. The impact of divorce, as we all know, can be horrific. And I firmly believe that it's not divorce per se that scars our children. It's the way parents approach divorce. And that's why we have to take responsibility, regardless of the kind of divorce you had, regardless of the mistakes you may have made in going through a divorce. It's your responsibility to undo that and to understand the impact, the emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, and physically on your children of every decision that you make as a parent regarding divorce. There are so many ways that we can hurt our children, especially during this time when we're so emotionally caught up with feeling anger, resentment, hostility, revenge, and various other kinds of emotions, disappointment and frustration. And it's natural and easy to want to take that out on our former spouse or former spouse-to-be. And it's very natural as well to want to get the children to side with you, to understand your frustration, to vent with them, to confide in them, to make them understand why you're so angry at their other parent. And all of these things, which may be natural, are so harmful to the children emotionally because the first thing is you're robbing your children of their childhood. When you confide in them, when you make them spies between one family, one side or the other as they move from home to home, when you tell them things about their other parent to win them on your side, all of those things make them feel so confused because children in general innately love both mom and dad, and they do not want to be forced to be making decisions in choosing their love. And even if your ex did some terrible things, was cheating on you and all kinds of things that you're so angry about, there still can be a good parent. So we're not talking about situations where we actually have abusive parenting. We're talking about the 95% of the cases where adults got divorced for adult issues and both parents love the children love the parents, and you're trying to work out some kind of arrangement of what's good, what's fair, what's in the well-being of the children. And that's why I wrote my book and created the Child-Centered Divorce Network, and that's why my three guests are here today to share with you their insights from their experience about this. So why don't we start with Cynthia and talk about the impact of divorce from your own perspective.
Well, I do agree with you completely, Roz, that it is not divorce itself per se that harms children. I imagine that staying in a situation that's untenable where the parents are continually arguing and bickering and fighting is like a bad marriage. A good divorce could have less impact on children than a bad intact marriage. And I do agree that it is the bitterness and ongoing conflict between the parents that damages children so dramatically. And this is exacerbated tremendously by the adversarial process. There's just no question about it. The parents are thrown into a system of winners and losers, and the children are one of the items to be won or lost, whether that's time sharing, whether that's decision-making responsibilities, whether that's money that needs to be paid on behalf of the children. The adversarial system in and of itself takes a massive toll on children. So if there is any way whatsoever that you can stay out of that system, whether it's through any of the models we've talked about or through mediation, absolutely must be done. And I think you hit the nail on the head, Roz. It's such a devastating emotional time for the parents that it is critical. And I was really glad to hear you say this, Mike, that you utilize divorce coaches and mental health professionals as needed, because it's so difficult for some people, harder for some than others. And typically in any given divorce, it's always harder for one person, one parent, than the other going through it. And so the progress is going to move as quickly as the slowest participant. That's what I say about mediation. It moves as quickly as the slowest participant. And that has to be respected. And parents, you need to accept the fact that sometimes you need help, and do not be ashamed or afraid to reach out for help, whether it's a parenting coordinator who can just help you work through the day-to-day decisions, help you and guide you into a new relationship with your co-parent, or a divorce coach who's going to be there on your side to help you, to be a support to you. Don't really try not to rely on family members. They're not trained. They love you. They're going to take your side, and you're going to further polarize the family. Remember, that is your children's family extends beyond mom and dad. So please, whatever you do, do not involve your extended family members in the fight. So absolutely, reach out, control your emotions, stay out of the adversarial system to the extent that you can. Never, ever, ever talk about your ex in front of the children. Absolutely, completely, don't even think of bad things about your ex in front of the children. It's they pick up on that. They understand, and it ultimately makes them wonder, what's wrong with me? That's my mom. That's my dad. I love them. It doesn't allow them to express their natural love for the other parent. So all of those things will be very, very helpful to your children. Think long term. Remember, there's going to be a time when you're going to have to sit at your children's graduations. You're going to have to sit together at their weddings, hopefully grandchildren. So please remember to think long term and put the kids first always.
Very well put. Thank you, Cynthia. And Cindy, I know you certainly have a lot to share with us about children and divorce.
Well, Roz, I think you and Cynthia have really just made the most important point, and I'm going to make it again. It is not divorce per se in and of itself that is harmful for children. There's a recent study that was published that did a long-term comparison of how children did after their parents' divorces. It was a 20-year study and probably the first one of its kind. And one of the findings was that one of the top predictors of how well children do after their parents' divorce is how well their parents get along with each other. And get along doesn't necessarily mean be best friends, although sometimes people are better friends after they divorce than when they're married.
That's right.
But parents do need to learn how to communicate with each other. I also think that it's really critical that parents respect communication boundaries. And you touched on that too, Roz, not to use your child as a messenger, not to confide in your child. And Cynthia, you said not to talk about your former spouse or even think about them because children feel these things. So those are important factors for folks to remember as they are going through this very transformative time of life. You know, when you're going through divorce, all of a sudden you're suddenly single. You're a single parent. You may live in a new home. You may start a new job. You may be juggling things differently than you did before. And so that stress creates issues for people. And Cynthia made the very good point that reaching out for help is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength. It's a sign of courage. There are so many resources available to people right now, right here, that they do not have to go it alone. You know, I have a seven-step principle I have for parents to keep things smooth, and it's STEEV, like Victor AC, STEVAC, and they stand for stop, think, educate, meaning educate yourself, evaluate, meaning evaluate your options, V, create a vision of what you want for your family, A, take some action, and C, have the courage to ask for help. And those steps exist simultaneously, and as you said, Roz, every decision that a parent makes is an opportunity for them to do things in one way or another. So take advantage of all the choices that you have and make good ones.
Thank you. That's wonderful. And Mike, you wrote a book that's really outstanding in helping parents understand the dynamics of children and divorce. You could mention the name again and give us your perspective on this.
Sure, thanks. It's called Stop Fighting Over the Kids, and the subtitle is Resolving Day-to-Day Custody Conflict in Divorce Situations. And that's the essence of what it's about. The day-to-day things is what really tears the children up. And a lot of times when people are stuck in a divorce or a custody battle, they're focusing on the outcome and the process and everything else. And then all the while the parenting and the childhood and all those good years when the children are young and as they're growing, you can lose them. I mean, it can just blow right by you. And so you have to really make it on the child-centered divorce. It's very possible to be separated going through a divorce, even an acrimonious divorce, and still, if you focus properly, and I love the STEVAC method, and if you would concentrate on things like that and spend the time with your children in that kind of a way, it doesn't have to be so bad. At least the parent-child part doesn't have to be bad. And in my book, what I go through is basically all those day-to-day things that people fight about. Usually in the court situation, they're fighting about the schedule, about the child access, visitation, if you will, which is a terrible word, but in any event, they're fighting about those kinds of things, decision-making power. But what happens is, meanwhile, when there's a school field trip, the parents fight over who can go, or they fight over things like who should buy the school supplies. They fight over things like what sports activity that the children should be in and who should go. And if it's my weekend and the child has a game, should they go to the game or should they not go to the game because it's my weekend? And obviously a child-focused person is going to say those kinds of activities are for the children, and the children should be able to go no matter which parent they're with. And people often lose sight of that basically the time with the other parent is really the child's time with the other parent. And so when people try to restrict that access, you're really restricting it upon your children. And then we talk about things like telephone contact both with the children and telephone contact between the parents. When there has to be some kind of parenting. A lot of times now people can do parenting by email during these kinds of situations. But I also talk about a lot of emotional things and putting things in perspective and even forgiveness. And a lot of it in that respect is you've got to just put the anger behind you. I think that's what stated at the very beginning of this call, that the anger will really drive things in a negative fashion. So you got to put it behind you. But the problem is, you've also got to live and go through life with all these little obstacles thrown at you. So how do you deal with it? And I'll end on one note as far as just little tips and tricks and things like that. And I don't quite frankly remember how long ago it was that I started doing it, or if I came up with it on my own, or if I saw it somewhere, or what. But I always try to suggest to parents that what you want to consider, it doesn't mean it's going to work in all situations, is consider when you do the pick-up and drop-off or the exchange of the children, especially young children, a lot of times that's the only times that the children are going to see you guys together anymore, except for weddings, funerals, graduations. But by and large, pick-up and drop-off, that's kind of it. So if you don't know how to act, or you act inappropriately during that time, that's sending a terrible message. So one way to eliminate that, especially if it's a moderate to high conflict situation, is a simple rule that whatever parent has the child at that time, that parent is then responsible for taking the child to the other parent. And it's not just about equal driving, but if you think about it, what happens is, if I'm taking my son to his mother, and what happens is I can have him in the car, I control when we leave, being on time. If she doesn't have to, like, come to the door, wait at the door, I don't have to wait at the door. I can say my hellos and goodbyes privately. We don't have to have any interaction. But, it's just, there's a lot of different benefits to just something as simple as that. It's just whoever has the child drops the child off. You just have to be very creative sometimes, and we try to help people be creative.
Creative and compassionate. Put yourself in your child's perspective, in their heads, and see the world from their place. And I just want to add one question that I always suggest in the coaching that I do, and that is, think about how your children are going to respond and speak to you about your divorce when they're grown. Because your children are going to grow up one day, regardless of how old they are now, and in many cases, they are very angry and resentful about the divorce situation. So before you make a decision regarding your children, ask yourself how they're going to respond about the decisions I made all through the divorce, post-divorce process, and it'll keep you on track. Now, we have a question that just came in, and I want to answer that, but I want to very briefly give each of you an opportunity to just let people know how they can access you, your books or services. So if they want to contact you on the web or a phone number or email, then they can do that. So why don't we start with you, Cynthia, and just give us a quick overview of how people can find you.
Thank you. You can find me at, I have a couple of sites, CynthiaTiano.com, CynthiaTiano.com, and there is a contact form there that you can fill out. Also, the Peaceful Divorce Network at peacefuldivorce.org, that's O-R-G, and if you're interested in the Happily Divorced book and audio program, that is at happilydivorced.org.
Excellent. And Cindy, how can people find you?
Thank you, Roz. I'm also on the peacefuldivorce.org website together with the rest of you who are on this call, and you can find information about me on my page on that site. You can also find me at Make Peace Mediation, that's M-A-K-E-P-E-A-C-E, mediation.com. And you can read my blog, and you can read articles that I've written at ezinearticles.com.
And Cindy has some excellent articles. I've read many of them, and I use them in my newsletter as well. And Mike, where can we find you?
Well, I have some excellent articles on my blog as well, because Rob is one of my best contributors presenting articles on the website, which is divorcewithoutdishonor.com. And my law website is MikeTheLawyer.com, and the information on my book is at StopFightingOverTheKids.com, and email is Mike at MikeTheLawyer.com.
Excellent. And if anyone's interested in finding me, Rosalind Sadaka, you can go to ChildCenteredDivorce.com, that's C-E-N-T-E-R-E-D. And you can access my book, How Do I Tell the Kids About the Divorce? Create a Storybook Guide to Preparing Your Children with Love. at www.howdoitellthekids.com. I also want to make available a free ebook called Post-Divorce Parenting, Success Strategies for Getting It Right. And if you just send me an email at divorcepro.com, I'm happy to send you that free ebook. Now let's get on to Michelle. I believe she lives in California, has a question for us, which is, what specific programs are out there for the children, or what can you recommend for your children if you are going through a collaborative divorce with your partner? Should they get help from you, or do you suggest outside resources as well for your children? How personally have you seen the collaboration method work in your specific practice? So, Mike, why don't you start with some of that?
Okay. As far as seeing it work, I mean, it works extremely well. The success rate is in the high 90% as far as the people, you know, any studies or statistics that people keep. And I think one of the biggest reasons for that is if you have the two people in the beginning that say, hey, we don't want to do the ugly way. We want to still be able to parent together. We want to end this as peaceful as possible. If they're committed to that from the outset and you have two collaboratively trained lawyers with access to these other professionals, it's almost like stacking the deck. I mean, how can it not work if the two parties are committed to it and have all this help and resource and you're not being adversarial and you're all working together? So for those reasons, among others, it's very successful. As far as programs for the children, a lot of places or a lot of states, a lot of counties have resources and programs for the children. For example, in Maryland, they have, it used to be called Children of Separation Divorce, and now it is the National Family Resiliency Center, and I think it's divorceabc.com, I believe, and they're in Columbia, Maryland, and they have been a national leader as far as actually doing trainings for judges, for courts, for parents, for teens, and they have actually programs where teens have put together programs in group settings as well to help children that go through the same kinds of issues. So those kind of resources I know are out there, and I think the teen or the peer counseling for children is actually a really good thing, because a lot of times these children think that, you know, it's just happening to them, so to speak, and even though they know that there are other parents and families that have separations and all, it's different. The children take it all very personally, and this way they get to interact with other children who have the guidance of professionals there to get those feelings out and to talk about them and understand things. So I think if you're doing a collaborative setting and you have a question about should we seek outside help for our child or children, I mean, that's the perfect setting to get that answer. You could have a child specialist, you know, meet with the children. The collaborative attorneys can pick, and they can make that assessment or help you with it, because sometimes, you know, we as parents can't see everything, and we're not trained, and we're kind of distracted in the process. So I think the collaborative process is very, very useful when you're thinking about what kind of resources can we get for the children, especially if
terrific.
The two parents are – the first thing is if the parents are co-parenting at least that much to say, hey, look, maybe we should get this person to see – how the children are doing, or have them evaluated. I mean, right there, they're at least already starting to make some decisions, which is better than a lot of situations.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Cindy, what suggestions do you have in this regard?
Well, picking up on what Mike said, I think it's really important to try to find what's available in your own community, because it really varies greatly. If you have an attorney that you're working with who is going to be advising you, perhaps that attorney can point you in the direction of your local courthouse, and there might be some resources available through the parenting coordinators, or in California, they're called special masters. If you want to find somebody who is specially trained in this area as a special master who might be able to lead you to some child-focused resources, you can contact me and I can try to help you get a little more specific with respect to where you are. I think one of the most important things that's coming across from my colleagues, all of them here, is the importance of leading by example, that if you take the high road and you make decisions that are going to be child-focused, that you're going to have appropriate boundaries, that you are going to look at your calendar not as Mom's Day and Dad's Day, but as Child's Day, Child's Day, Child's Day, that you are going to be in the right frame of mind, but I do not suggest that you take it upon yourself as a parent to be the only resource that your children have. Do find what's out there and available.
Thank you. And Cynthia, can you add to this?
Yeah, I have a little bit of a different approach, having been in the litigation pit for so many years. And oftentimes, the child was the one who would ultimately manifest behavior as a result of the bad behavior of the parents. So the child was the one who was sent to a variety of different counselors. I remember some little kids once saying, do we have to go to the talking doctor anymore? And I think that they were sending these kids to a psychologist, obviously. But I'm not saying that there aren't times when it's necessary, but I don't know that it's necessary in every case. I do believe that it's probably more likely that the parents need the assistance and that things will flow much more smoothly. And I want to give a major plug here for Roz's book, which is a completely awesome and amazing book. And it doesn't matter if the children already know about the divorce. The methodology in that book is so transformative and healing for the children that I would say that in every family that has children going through this process, or they've already, they're in the process or even been through the process, that it's never too late to employ the techniques that are in there. And I think that the children especially and the parents are going to find tremendous healing in the pages of those books. So I would highly recommend that as a resource.
Well, thank you so much. I sure appreciate that. And
absolutely.
We're getting close to the top of the hour. I'm going to extend this for a few more minutes since we have so much valuable information to cover. And I also wanted to suggest to our listeners that if you're interested, we can get this group of people together for follow-up teleseminars, maybe once a month or something like that throughout the year, where we can answer questions more specifically and follow up with individuals and be there as a resource to make sure that you're getting the help and assistance that you need. So if my expert guests don't mind that, I'm just going to put that out as a possibility, because it's such a group of wonderfully articulate professionals, and I know you have so much more to share. We could be talking for three more hours and not cover everything. So that's a possibility if
sure.
Those of you who are listening want to have some additional teleseminars on this topic, then we certainly can make that available. And I also
sure.
want
sure.
to great. I also want to do a mention about next July 21st, which next week is our third teleseminar in the series for National Child Centered Divorce Month. It's a Tuesday night as well. And that's Healthy Transitioning Beyond Divorce, when we're going to have divorce coaches talk about various aspects of transitioning for you as a parent in your own life, and then how to help your family transition. And, of course, there's a lot of sticky areas that obviously are involved in that as you move through divorce and then beyond divorce. So I wanted to, before we close, ask each of you if you could give us a parenting or co-parenting tip that you feel is most important for successful co-parenting as we bring this particular teleseminar to a close. I think your insights and tips are really valuable now, so if you could each share one or two with us, and then we'll close. Mike, why don't you start?
Okay. This tip is parenting, but indirectly. It's more of a communication tip, but communication in these situations is so key and so much part and parcel of parenting that I think it's worth mentioning. If there's an issue to be discussed, let's say it's by phone, and they're having a phone conversation, and I'm going to just say that it's basically, we'll make it a relatively new separation or still not too pleasant of a situation where the parents aren't communicating well and the kids are suffering in some way or another. And when they've had a history of hanging up on each other, name calling, and all those kinds of things. So in that kind of a situation, if there's something to be discussed and you make a phone call to the other parent, if you can set a time ahead of time, especially now with the email and everything, say, look, you know, I'd like to talk to you about XYZ, about this time or that time or whatever. So make an appointment, more or less, to have a phone conversation, unless it's an emergency. And then when you have that conversation, just stick to one issue. So if you have a discussion and you resolve an issue, whether it's, let's say, who's going on the field trip, okay, once that issue is resolved, end it there. You know, you've ended on a positive, say goodbye, and that's it. Because if you now move to the next issue and you resolve that, sooner or later you're going to hit an issue where it's not going to be resolved, and you're going to end in the same old way that you always end. Somebody's going to hang up, somebody's going to say something they regret, and it's going to go backwards. So if you make progress, end on progress. And that's something that it's a little thing, but it can go a long way.
Thank you. And Cynthia?
I would say two of the best tips that I can give you are, one is to hold the vision of what you want your co-parenting relationship to be like with your soon-to-be former spouse or your former spouse or former partner, your co-parent. So this creates a proactivity where you are literally holding the vision, visualizing your interchanges, visualizing the positive role modeling that you're doing for your children, visualizing what it's going to be like, how delighted your children are going to be or your child's going to be at their graduation or their wedding or whatever, as the two of you get along brilliantly together. Hold that vision. And in conjunction with that, start thinking of all of the things that you once loved about your co-parent when you married them. You love this person once enough to marry them and have children with them. Begin to make a list, and I do this in my mediations with my co-parents, make a list of all of the positive things about that person and focus and begin to focus on those positive things, because we all know that what we focus on expands.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that. And Cindy?
Roz, I think that one of the most important things to remember is that when we talk about things like peaceful divorce, collaborative divorce, cooperative divorce, that it's important that people not equate that with being weak. You know, we have a saying in the peaceful divorce movement, just because we're peaceful doesn't mean we're weak. And I really think it's important to understand that being peaceful does not mean be a doormat, let people roll over you, just go along with everything. What it does mean is that you have power. You have power to make a change in the way your family's divorce proceeds and the way your family ends up down the line, 25 years down the line after you first talked about getting divorced. And you can be that power. We talk about the power of one in terms of a relationship, because if one person changes the way they operate, it's going to create an effect on the rest of the participants. Be patient, be persistent, be peaceful, and like Cynthia said, hold the vision.
Such outstanding advice. Thank you all for that. I just wanted to add one other tip that I got from Mike Mastrassi that I just love. And in his book, he says that when you're dealing with a parenting issue, a co-parenting issue, if you just think about how you would have responded to that had you not been divorced, it may help you stay on track, because sometimes we blow things around because we're dealing with our, quote, ex, and there's a lot of energy behind that. So if you just say to yourself, how would I respond to this question if I wasn't divorced? What would I say as a parent? It'll keep you more on track and remind you that you still are a parent, and it's your children's best interest that you're trying to think of in making any decision. And my last tip is that I really highly recommend that we be willing to apologize to our children. If we find that we made a mistake in judgment and error, that we maybe broke some of the rules about bad-mouthing our ex at some former time, or confiding in our kids and getting them involved in a lot of emotional drama that they needn't to have, or made decisions about trying to alienate our children from the other parent. If we reach levels where we can regret it and understand that it isn't in their best interest, children are so respectful and appreciative of a parent who can own up and say, you know, I'm sorry, that wasn't the smartest decision I made. I apologize to you. Children will always forgive, and you are a role model for them, and that is showing what a big person you are, and that's the kind of behavior you want to role model for them. So I wanted to leave you with that thought as well. I want to thank my guest experts today. I just can't tell you how impressed I am with the wisdom you've shared and how articulately you all shared it. That's Michael Mistrassi, Esquire, Cynthia Tiano, Esquire, and Cindy Harari, Esquire, who are all working in their own particular realms, helping people to create a win-win child-centered divorce. And this is Rosalind Sadaka, certified corporate trainer and author, and we wish you a wonderful evening. I hope you'll be joining us next Tuesday evening, same time, same channel. Thank you all, and have a wonderful future.
Thank you, Roz. Thank you, Roz.
Good evening to you all.